Following are some comments on William Shakespeare's The Tempest, Act 3. So glad of this as they, I cannot be. Miranda and the captured Ferdinand fall earnestly in love, as Prospero observes unseen, then goes to prepare spells to complete his triumph over the conspirators. Act 3, Scene 1 marks the transition to more legitimate attempts at mutual self-discovery on the part of Ferdinand and Miranda. In turn, this focus will gesture towards a future that includes a regenerated Dukedom of Milan and Kingdom of Naples. The developing affection between Ferdinand and Miranda is central in this scene. Ferdinand performs his difficult labors, mindful of Miranda and in hopes of better times. For him, love makes labor redemptive. It is not something to be avoided so that one can set up a fool's paradise. In soliloquy, he says, quote unquote, "The mistress which I serve quickens what's dead and makes my labor's pleasures." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 6 through 7. By his patience, Ferdinand reveals his genuine nobility. We are being encouraged to note the contrast with Caliban here, since that character grumbled darkly when Prospero laid upon him the same task of fetching wood. To be fair, though, Ferdinand has something wonderful to look forward to, while Caliban seems doomed to perpetual servitude. Miranda, as we know, has plenty of fine qualities, above all empathy and a strong intellect. At no point does she seem merely passive, even when her imperious wizard of a father is holding forth for her benefit, or when she sees an opportunity to lessen Ferdinand's heavy burden of labor. She has a bit of the rebel in her, as indicated by the following advice she gives Ferdinand. Quote unquote, "My father is hard at study. Pray now, rest yourself. He's safe for these 3 hours." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 19 through 21. It's easy to appreciate that kind of teen spirit. All in all, Miranda's words and actions show that she's ready to hear the information her father has imparted to her. When Miranda reveals her name to Ferdinand, the young prince plays on the etymology of it, exclaiming, quote unquote, "Admired Miranda," Act 3, Scene 1, line 37. Ferdinand has apparently spent a fair amount of time at his father's court in Naples, and he's nowhere near as inexperienced in love matters as Miranda. He tells her that he has, quote unquote, "liked several women, but," quote unquote, "never any with so full soul but some defect in her did quarrel with the noblest grace she owed and put it to the foil." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 43 through 46. "But in Miranda," says Ferdinand in Petrarchan mode, "he has discovered a woman," quote unquote, "created of every creature's best." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 47 through 48. From here, it's on to Miranda's admission that while she has seen only one other man, her father, she leaves Caliban aside, at first a spile of Ferdinand, she has seen enough to know that he's the only man for her. Act 3, Scene 1, lines 50 through 55. From there, it's only a hop-skip to pledges of loyalty that, in Elizabethan-Jacobean times, basically amount to marriage vows. Ferdinand declares himself forever devoted to Miranda, and she boldly asks him, quote unquote, "My husband, then?" Miranda receives the desired answer, quote unquote, "Here's my hand." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 88 through 89. The entire scene demonstrates that the two lovers are quickly mastering the fitting and at times decorous language essential to a proper royal match. Marriage is an institution, and a political one at that in their case, but Ferdinand and Miranda's passionate yet nuanced conversation shows that they have made an excellent start. These two are, after all, the future leaders of Naples and Milan. Prospero, ever solicitous about what Miranda is up to, is, of course, secretly listening in on her and Ferdinand throughout their courtship encounter and their marriage pledge. As before, he blesses this union to himself, since he is convinced that Ferdinand and Miranda will prove compatible. There's a hint of the father's jealousy, a la Freud, in Prospero's observation, quote unquote, "So glad of this as they, I cannot be." But even so, he says, quote unquote, "My rejoicing at nothing can be more." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 92 through 94. Prospero takes his leave with a reminder to himself that it's time now to go back to his magic book. He must craft appropriate spells to complete his triumph over his enemies, and this objective will require delaying Ferdinand and Miranda's courtship for a while, even as Prospero blesses and furthers it. Quote unquote, "I'll to my book," he says, quote unquote, "for yet ere supper time must I perform much business appertaining." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 94 through 96. Based on what follows, Prospero probably refers here to the trap he's preparing to spring against Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian. "When I waked, I cried to dream again. Caliban promotes the wonderful qualities of the island and pushes Stefano to plot an attempt against Prospero and make himself king." In Act 3, Scene 2, Caliban is busy courting Stefano as his master and chafing at Trinculo's disrespectful treatment of a faithful servant. He says to Stefano, quote unquote, "How does thy honor? Let me lick thy shoe. I'll not serve him. He is not valiant." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 21 through 22. Caliban is easily won over to servitude. To him, government is a protection racket. We notice that he describes himself, rather like Prospero, as someone exiled by a tyrant and cheated of his inheritance by evil powers. Quote unquote, "I say by sorcery he got this isle." Act 3, Scene 2, line 49. Caliban's plan is to surprise Prospero and have Stefano kill him. Quote unquote, "'Tis a custom with him in the afternoon to sleep. There thou mayest brain him." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 81 through 82. Stefano, as usual, is spinning a storyline from his own base desires. Once having seized Prospero's books and murdered the man, he thinks, he will be free to marry Miranda. Quote unquote, "Monster, I will kill this man. His daughter and I will be king and queen." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 100 through 101. All of these parodic conspirators serve their own base material desires. Ariel, however, is surveilling them even as they devise their plot, and the would-be ruler Stefano ends up following the so-called monster Caliban. Act 3, Scene 2, line 108 and line 143. Well, Caliban does know his island, which is, quote-unquote, "full of noises, sounds, and sweet airs that give delight and hurt not." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 128 through 129. The entire passage near the end of the second scene is among the most haunting and lyrical in all of Shakespeare. Caliban says with aching love for the island he believes is rightly his, quote unquote, "And then in dreaming the clouds methought would open and show riches ready to drop upon me, that when I waked I cried to dream again." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 134 through 136. In any event, the die is cast. Caliban, Stefano, and Trinculo have planned their attack on the old Magus who stands in the way of their dominion. "You are three men of sin." Alonso despairs of his son Ferdinand's survival, and Ariel prepares a banquet for Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian that ends with stern warnings of punishment to come. In Act 3, Scene 3, King Alonso is ready to give up the search for his lost son Ferdinand, saying, quote unquote, "Even here I will put off my hope." Act 3, Scene 2, Line 7. The conspirators, Antonio and Sebastian, however, are as determined as before to see their plot through to success. As Prospero looks on from a height, Ariel's, quote-unquote, strange shapes enter to music and dance around a banquet that they then invite Alonso's party to enjoy. As the banquet is brought in, Sebastian sees only, quote-unquote, drollery in this miraculous sight. Act 3, Scene 3, Line 22. Gonzalo, by contrast, sees the excellence and civility of this strange island. Though the inhabitants are monstrous seeming, he says, quote-unquote, yet note their manners are more gentle, kind, than of our human generation. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 33 through 34. The wonder of exploration is part of romance, and Antonio testifies, even if sardonically, to his own sense of wonder. Quote unquote, travelers ne'er did lie, though fools at home condemn him. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 27 through 28. Just as the men pluck up the courage to step forward and eat, Ariel swoops down in the form of a harpy, and with a clap of his wings, makes the banquet vanish. The harpy episode has a classical precedent in Virgil's Aeneid, Book 3, where the harpies snatch away the Trojan remnant's feast, and Celino, the harpy's chief, warns the beleaguered Trojans that they will suffer famine before they reach their destined home in Italy. The reason for this is that, like Odysseus and his crew on their way home to Ithaca, they killed animals belonging to a divine being without asking permission. In Odysseus's case, the offended deity was Helios, the sun god, while with regard to Aeneas, it was the harpies themselves, and they demanded strict retribution for his breach of hospitality. When Shakespeare works these ancient emblems of revenge into a key scene in The Tempest, he is most likely reminding us how serious a fix Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian might be in if they weren't dealing with a reasonable governor like Prospero. Justice was no delicate matter in the time of Elizabeth I or James I. In cases of treason, it tended to involve prolonged torture and horrible forms of execution. Merely being beheaded with an axe instead of hanging or worse was considered a favor to guilty noblemen. People convicted of serious crimes against the state usually didn't get such a quick death. Prospero's enemies are lucky, then, that his invocation of revenge is ethereal and ceremonial rather than material. The Tempest as a whole is, among other things, a fable of power and authority. The play is much concerned with how power is won, maintained, and lost, and how authority ought to be wielded by fallible human beings. So the reminder of how violent and sudden retribution can be is salutary for Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian. Once Ariel has snatched away his carefully prepared fool's banquet, in the name of destiny and fate, he aims a stern address at the quote-unquote three men of sin. Act 3, Scene 3, Line 54. Ere now, he says, men have been driven to suicide by the type of madness with which he has afflicted them. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 59 through 61. They have been driven here to a lonely island to be punished for their sins in exiling Prospero. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 69 through 76. For this offense, they are threatened with, quote-unquote, lingering perdition. Act 3, Scene 3, Line 78. Their only chance to save themselves is to feel, quote-unquote, heart's sorrow, and demonstrate, quote-unquote, a clear life ensuing. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 82 through 83. Failure to accept this penitential program would leave them only to live out an anti-romance pattern, a futile life of repetitious action, stripped of meaning and redemptive quality. This is the first of two high points in Prospero's wielding of power. Delighted with the performance of Ariel and his other ministers, he says, quote-unquote, My high charms work, and these mine enemies are all knit up in their distraction. They now are in my power, and in these fits I leave them. Act 3, Scene 3, lines 89 through 92. Soon thereafter, Prospero goes off to see Ferdinand and Miranda. At present, the quote-unquote men of sin still think Ferdinand is dead, and Alonso, hearing the very waves, winds, and thunder speak, quote-unquote, the name of Prosper, feels bitter remorse at the loss of his son and wishes only for a watery death. Act 3, Scene 3, line 100. Sebastian and Antonio wander off, thinking somehow to wage war against the spirit host, quote-unquote, one fiend at a time. Act 3, Scene 3, line 103. Gonzalo alone sees what's happening to these desperate souls. Quote unquote, their great guilt, like poison given to work a great time after, now gins to bite the spirits. Act 3, Scene 3, lines 105 through 107. The old counselor therefore orders others in the party to follow after them and keep them from further harm. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Monday, June 2nd, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.